Welcome to Recalculating America. Like its award-winning book, Recalculating is dedicated to small business in America and has been named the best small business book in the Independent Press Awards competition. Each Recalculating program is dedicated to helping small business leaders add profits through efficient growth. During every Recalculating program, experts will give listeners useful information about starting or growing their small business. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money. He specializes in helping small business owners make their money work as hard as they do.
Dan Perkins here, and I'm your co-host along with Don Mazzella of Recalculating, the radio program that has evolved out of the award-winning book dedicated to helping small business leaders increase their profits. We draw our name from the book named the Best Small Business Book of 2017 by the Independent Press. This book features contributions of more than 100 presidents, experts, and leaders, all whom offer you ways to grow your small business.
Well, Dan, everybody, but most people love Hawaiian food. They've been enjoying it for many years, even before Hawaii became a state. And now, putting a new twist on this old favorite is Michael Haith, who's CEO of Teriyaki Badness, and we're really looking forward to hearing from him. Michael, welcome to the show. Tell us about your company, how it differs and what it provides its customers, and your website.
Aloha. Teriyaki Madness provides big bowls of awesomeness, marinated grilled meats that are served with high-grade rice, vegetables, and noodles. We have marinated, grilled, all-natural chicken, breast and thigh. We've got beef. We've got tofu. And what Teriyaki Madness really is kind of a new way of eating. It's about quality ingredients served in generous portions. We're a franchise system with 47 units open around the country, with another 100 on tap to be open in the next year or so. We are one of the fastest growing fast casual concepts in the United States.
Wow. And your website?
Yeah.
It's www.teriyakimadness.com.
Pretty simple. I guess my first question is, what's unique about your restaurants?
You know, Teriyaki Madness has been around for 15 years. It grew out of the ubiquitous teriyaki bowl restaurants in Seattle, Washington. The original owners brought it to Las Vegas, Nevada, where they wanted to see if it would work out of Seattle. Much like New York pizza out of New York or Philly cheesesteak out of Philadelphia, Seattle teriyaki bowls have always been in Seattle, and they'd started to go into the West Coast, started to move down through California. They're big in Canada. And the founders really wanted to see if it would work outside of that area, and they took it to Nevada and built a couple of shops, and there was instant madness. The raving fans and customers wanted to open their own, so they created a franchise system. They recruited a few franchisees in Nevada, and in about 5 years ago, they recruited me as an investor. I had a small angel investing firm called Franchise Sherpas, and we were brought on to go ahead and help them expand outside of Nevada, where they had seven shops, a few franchisees, and amazing numbers, an amazing amount of fans. And, gosh, since then, we've really built systems and processes and expanded wildly around the country with folks who really know what they're doing.
Dan, I'm sure you have a couple of questions.
Absolutely. Michael, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us today. I want to talk a little bit about what you talked about in the very beginning of the show when you talked about the the quality of the food. As a franchise manager, as you get further away from a span of control, how do you maintain product quality?
That's a great question. You know, it's really about simplicity. Simplicity allows everyone to follow a system and process that's so much easier. We've got a centralized supplier with Sysco. We work with Pepsi. We make sure that everyone who comes in really values the quality and the integrity of our products. And then we've got, believe it or not, what's really become one of the best ways to ensure that everybody's following our processes and systems is our customers. Our customers want all of our shops to be successful. And if they see a shop that's not following the typical recipes or the service parameters or the experience that we see in all of our shops, they'll let us know through social media, whether it's Yelp or it's Google or Facebook. So we get reports daily almost in rolling up all of our social media reviews. And all of our owners see them, and all of our staff see them, and we all know how every single shop is doing every single day based on our social media reviews.
So when you created an arrangement with Sysco, is Sysco your principal meat supplier?
They do all of our supplies, yes.
Okay. So that a franchisee who wants to buy into your franchise has to agree to use Sysco products in their stores.
They do, and it makes sense because they have the consistency of the food and they get it for a great price.
Do you find that some franchisers, and I've heard this many, many times before, as we grow the number of franchises we have, and I understand what you just said about your customers being a great check and balance to make sure you're doing things correctly. But do you reach a point of scale that it becomes much more difficult to manage the business?
It actually becomes a bit easier because our customers know what to expect because they have experience with the brand. Our suppliers have more leeway because there's more inventory in stock for more of our teriyaki shops. And, you know, above all, the franchisees really look out for each other. And if one franchisee is not staying at the same level as everyone else, everyone helps manage each other.
Now, you talked about in your opening remarks with Don about the possibility of adding, and if I heard it correctly, perhaps 100 more stores?
Within the next probably 12 to 18 months, yeah.
What has accelerated from 15 stores in 15 years to adding 100 more stores in the next 12 months?
Well, I actually bought out the founders about a year and a half ago with the express goal of expanding quickly. And we do that by bringing in an experienced team of people and really creating success for the franchisees. The vast majority of our expansion is our current franchisees acquiring additional shops and building out additional shops around the country.
Yeah, that seems to be a typical process. You're not just a single franchise owner. Over time, you might have multiple or maybe even a dozen or more.
If it works, it's done, it works.
So, it does. So what is we're a small business show, and we're not only trying to help people who own small businesses make them more productive, we also like to think that we help people who are thinking about becoming small business people starting their own business. And what does it cost for an individual to be a franchisee for you?
Yeah, all in with cash, working capital, and building out the shop and franchise support fees and those kind of things, it's between $300,000 and $400,000. And typically we can get that financed with about a third down.
And is there a significant disparity in that price based on location?
That's exactly right. It depends on what part of the country it's in. Of course, it's going to cost more to build out a shop in Manhattan versus Topeka, Kansas.
Is there a place, speaking of building out in Manhattan, I would think that would be a tough market to crack with the number of multicultural restaurants all over the city, thousands of them. But is there a particular, setting aside Manhattan, is in your analysis of where the opportunity, what's the ideal city for a franchisee?
Well, what's very interesting is we do well in large cities where it could be a neighborhood that supports it. We're really an option for folks who want quality ingredients. So folks who work out want to get protein with vegetables, they'll come to Teriyaki Madness. For folks who want a big bowl of food that is out of the ordinary, they'll come to Teriyaki Madness. If there's a mother who really cares about what her kids eat, she'll come to Teriyaki Madness. There's not that many options outside of pizza, burger, sandwiches for folks to go ahead and get something with some protein that tastes delicious and it's easy to get to. So we'll do well in Great Falls, Montana, for example, where we just opened, or Bettendorf, Iowa, all the way to Los Angeles or Las Vegas or Denver, Miami. We are really kind of resonating with folks in all markets.
So do you market yourself as, quote, Hawaiian food?
We really don't. We really promote ourselves more as Asian fusion. They're really bowls of rice or noodles with Asian-inspired marinades and meats. We cut our own fresh vegetables every morning. We buy all-natural chicken. We grill that off, and we walk it to order. So everything is customized to order. And that's one of the things I think our customers value the most, is quality ingredients customized for their needs. All of our sauces, 9 sauces, are made in-house, and they're all gluten-free.
And are they all teriyaki-based?
Most of them, yes. There's yakisoba chicken, for example, which isn't teriyaki, but it serves a need. Kids order it for like chicken fingers in a fast food restaurant. Or there's orange mm-hmm. chicken, which has a different base. So we try and mix things up quite a bit. But everything is simple, and it's all based on Asian flavors.
And beef on your menu?
Excuse me?
Is there beef on your menu?
There is. We serve a marinated steak that's got a Korean kind of flair to it, and it's one of our biggest sellers.
It's interesting as a person. Don, how much time do I have here?
We got 2 minutes before we go to our break.
Okay. So, Michael, I wanted to ask you this question, and if you want to continue it after the break, we can do that. I'm fascinated with a franchisee who's got a specialty food that's looking for explosive growth. At the same time, another component in the food industry, people like Blue Apron, are bringing what they believe to be quality food to the house, so they don't even have to go. The people don't even have to leave the house to go. Do you find that interesting?
I find it interesting, and I think it is a trend overall. One of our biggest pushes are takeout, of which we're 50% currently, and we've just moved into delivery over the last couple of quarters, and that's as much as 20% of our sales in our teriyaki shops around the country. And we do that with third-party suppliers like Uber Eats and Grubhub.
Right. I'm just curious about whether what component is that delivery of your growth, your sales?
Well, the delivery, we expect that to be 20 to 40% within the next couple of years.
I know. I just recently saw some other companies that are expanding through partnerships with delivery services, and not that they're necessarily trying to replicate Blue Apron, but the idea of delivering it so that the consumer doesn't have to go out. But I think we have to take a break now, right, Don?
Yes, we do, Dan. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Dan Perkins here with your Recalculating Small Business Tip of the Day. Have you ever tried to find someone to help you in a big box store? Your time is valuable, and if you have a question, you need someone to give you an answer. Do you find yourself wandering from aisle to aisle trying to find someone to help you? Finding help is a problem in almost every big box store chain, regardless of what they're selling, TVs, clothes, even nuts and bolts. Greater customer service can differentiate a small business from a big box competitor. When customers can't find someone to help them, they take their frustration out on the store. They are angry. A smart small business owner makes it a point to be attentive, helpful, and polite. May I help you? Are the sweet words of success. Check out recalculating.biz for more useful small business suggestions. This has been Dan Perkins with your small business tip of the day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
Ace is your neighborhood place for everything Yeti, from coolers to drinkware. And right now, for the first time ever, Yeti is on sale. During the Ace Memorial Day sale, save 25% on Yeti Rambler stainless steel drinkware. It's virtually indestructible and keeps drinks hot or cold for longer. So hurry into your local Ace and save 25% on Yeti stainless steel drinkware. Offer valid for Ace Rewards members only through June 4th. Excludes Duracoat colors and jugs. See participating stores for details.
We're back here with Michael Haith. We're talking about his franchise, Teriyaki Madness. I want to jump in here, Dan, and follow up on your question. There seems to be two trends that seem to be working for you a little bit, if I heard the numbers correctly. Americans aren't going out as much as they used to, but they do want some unusual food in their kitchen while they're staying home. And you're taking advantage of it. Do you see this expanding trend, a passing trend, or is there a way of combining the two even more than it is now?
You know, it's a trend. It's not a fad. There's no question that millennials and others really enjoy staying home. My family, for example, in Denver, Colorado, in the suburbs, probably orders in once or twice a week. We don't necessarily do things like Blue Apron or put together meals because we do cook at home, and we've got some accomplished cooks at home. But one of the nice things about our concept is our food travels so well. As Asian food in our packaging delivered by third-party delivery services, our food actually gets better when it's had time to sit and the flavors come together. Hamburgers and French fries just simply don't travel that well.
Well, you mentioned Asian. Are your customers, is there any demographic like Asians that like food like this? Or is it, well, I'll rephrase it. Who are your primary customers?
You know, it's really very widespread. You know, we have the same base pretty much as a concept where the quality of the ingredients are important, like maybe a Chipotle or a Zoe's Kitchen or some of the other brands where the quality of ingredients comes first and foremost. So once again, we get the big eaters because we've got big bowls of food. But we also get folks who want to make two meals out of our food. But it's really not as much demographics as it is psychographics, as folks who either want a big, flavorful meal or folks who really enjoy the quality of the ingredient.
Well, I'm going to ask one more question and turn back to Dan. But who buys your franchise and why do they buy it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So this is my third company. As I said, I bought it about a year and a half ago from the original owners. And one of the things that I like the most about franchising is it gives an opportunity for folks who have always dreamed of owning their own small business. Franchising gives them an opportunity to take their shot. And we really focus on that at Teriyaki Madness. We recruited really experienced, seasoned executives. And our goal was to create a curriculum, a process, training, management, and support for folks who have never been in business before, never mind not even being in the restaurant business. We let them know how difficult the restaurant business is, and we work with them to make sure that they've got what it takes for us to believe that they're going to be successful. And then we support the heck out of them for not only finding locations and building out their locations and hiring their staff and preparing the food and running and marketing their operation. We really work to make sure that they understand what being a small business owner is like on a daily basis and how difficult it can be. So we support them on all of the psychological and mental elements of running one's own business. In addition, one of the most satisfying things here is the recruitment of folks who have multiple other franchises. They've got multiple units, and they recognize the value of the business model and the profitability of the business. So we've got a mix of all kinds of people who are attracted to the franchise for a variety of reasons.
Dan, it's all yours.
Thank you. Thank you. So the people who buy, continuing that discussion, the people who buy the franchises, do they come from all walks of life, or do they have a commonality to them, either racially or ethnic, or are they just all over the place?
You know, there really isn't a commonality outside of a good work ethic. We will promise anyone that if they really give it 100% and they follow our operations manual, they've got a great chance of success. But we really take great pride in giving first-generation immigrants a shot. You know, how do they take their shot at the American dream? How do we take someone who's always worked for a corporation, who's always dreamed of working their sweat equity and creating something for themselves? Those are the things that really attract people to Teriyaki Madness and really turn us on a daily basis, is helping folks really take their shot at owning their own business and being able to build it as large as they would like.
You know, one of the things that is somewhat difficult about running a franchise is that if you've never run a franchise before, they depend heavily upon you, the franchisee, to help them get started and keep their going. But it's not for everybody. And what do you offer, if anything, for somebody who says, this was a mistake. I am not cut out. I'm not willing to put in, you know, 18 hours a day, 6 days a week. They're disappointed.
That's a terrific question. We really put a lot forth in helping folks transition out. The nice thing about being part of a franchise system is you've got a built-in peer group of folks who are looking to expand, and they can buy out one business that they don't want to run anymore, and we'll also go ahead and show them how to do a resale, or in some cases we'll even buy the shop back, and we'll run it ourselves.
Hmm. So, go ahead, Don.
I was just going to ask you, what does it cost for a franchise?
So, all in, it runs between $300,000 and $400,000. The franchise fee is based on what package one buys. We've got a lot of folks who want to build more than one unit. It's $45,000 franchise fee for one. It's $99 for three. And then we've got a lot of territories being negotiated currently with experienced folks who just want more. And we'll work out what that territory is to make it fair for everyone.
Back to you, Dan. I just had that one question come across the desk.
Sure. I just want to follow up. Is when somebody buys a franchise from you, for Teriyaki Madness, what is their protected area? Do you do that?
Well, we do that for the larger territories, for the folks who want to buy in and get 5 or 10 of them. We've got a build-out quota. So they've got a development schedule that they need to fulfill. But for the most part, what we do is we find a fantastic location, and we agree to what their protection around their teriyaki shop should be. And that's anywhere from 1 to, in sparsely populated areas, maybe 5 or 10 miles.
So when you look at a franchisee or a potential franchisee, what are you looking for? What are the traits that do you spend a lot of time interviewing a potential franchisee? And if so, what are you looking for?
So I'm going to answer that very definitively. Coachability. We're a franchise system that very much values what people bring to the table, what experiences they have, what strengths they have to bring to the community. But we're looking for someone to match the culture. Do they match the Teriyaki Madness community? And coachability. Are they willing to go ahead and follow a proven operations manual that's been built out over the last 15 years? Can they go ahead and listen, or are they going to come in and start telling us what we should change, which isn't why you should buy a franchise?
Right.
One more question. We're getting low on time, unfortunately.
Okay. I'll just ask one more. Have you ever turned anybody down?
We turn down people all the time. We probably turn down, I'm going to say, about 90% of the folks who inquire about exploring Teriyaki Madness. It takes a unique skill set for someone to really be able to make any business successful. The restaurant business is a little bit harder. And we want to make sure, once again, it's about culture. It's very important that they match up with who the team is and who the other franchisees are. So the franchisees have a say as to whether they like a candidate or not, as does the entire team. And can we help make them successful? Will they help make the community stronger? And can we fulfill their expectations?
Thank you. Don?
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. We're talking with Michael Haith. He's the CEO of Teriyaki Madness. Michael, tell people how they can find out more.
Yeah, go to www.teriyakimadness.com. Take a look around. If it all looks good, go ahead and fill out a little form. I think it's one or two lines. Tell us that you'd like some more information. You'll get a call from someone, and we'll talk it through.
We're really glad you came by today. I know I learned a lot. I hope our audience did as well.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Now we have a word from our sponsor.
Life, it's made up of the simple day-to-day moments that keep us all running on full of joy, passion, and restlessness. It's singing full on to your car radio with the windows wide open. It's a whole bunch of early morning rush hours and a few late night runs for Rocky Road. It's full of pit stops and drive-thrus. It's life, and we live it between fill-ups at Valero. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at valerocleangas.com.
Dan Perkins here with your recalculating small business tip of the day. Did you know that a candle can be an energy saver for home and office? An old-fashioned candle can be a new-fashioned energy saver, and at the same time provide a warm glow to any home office. Adding a candle seems like a silly thing to do, but it can help check for drafts. You can use the candle to test if new windows are needed. Here's how. First, take a roll of blue painter's tape and tear off pieces and put them on your left arm. Pass the candle around the opening and mark the spots around each window and door where the candle flame flickers. When you have finished your test, step back and see if you have tape around all of the window or only one side. The more tape you have on the window, the more money you will save by replacing those windows and doors. Check out recalculating.biz for more useful small business suggestions. This has been Dan Perkins with your small business tip of the day.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit costs. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
We've been asked recently by a number of people, how can they listen to past shows? And if you go to recalculating.biz, you'll find a link to iHeartRadio, which will allow you to go back and listen to shows that you didn't get a chance to finish or never heard. So we encourage you to go there, recalculating.biz.
You know, Dan, closing a sale faster is a dream of every marketer. I'm really glad today because we have with us John Asher, whose new book is called Close Deals Faster, The 15 Shortcuts of the Asher Sales Method. I like his modesty, but I know his system works. John, welcome to the program.
Hey, great to be with you guys.
Okay. Tell us about your company, about your book, and where people can find more information before we do anything else.
Well, the website is www.asherstrategies.com. We're really focused on three things: helping people figure out how to get the right salesperson by using an aptitude assessment that's got correlation studies behind it, so it's predictive of job success. Number two, sales training. And number three, helping companies with sales and marketing process help. So those are the three things we're really focused on.
But what are the basic principles that you espouse in your book and in your seminars?
Well, we've essentially taken the best from 300 sales books, 15 global sales training classes, integrated, gotten rid of the chaff and the weak stuff, only using the strong techniques, overlaid it with the latest neuroscience studies, and have come up with 10 fundamental sales skills that are required for sales success. And the first 8 are about getting a new customer. The 9th is how do you take care of the customer once you get them. The 10th is how to ask for referrals. And then within the first 8 of the new deal, there are 15 known shortcuts to make this happen faster.
Well, I'm going to jump in with one question and then turn it over to Dan. But I was always told the first rule for closing a deal is to make sure the customer talks more than you do. What do you say to that?
I didn't quite get that. The customer does what more than you do?
The customer talks more than you do.
Oh, no, absolutely agree. There's this revolutionary new concept, and it's called listen to the customer. So the great salespeople are actually the great listeners, not the great talkers.
That I agree. So that's one of your so how does that fit into what you're saying in your book?
Well, there's these 10 skills. The first 8 are in the order that they're used to get a new customer. And the 5th skill is called ask the right questions and listen. And one of the 15 shortcuts is called being a perfect listener. So the 3 techniques allow us not to be good, not to be great, not to be outstanding, not superior, but perfect. In other words, at the end of a needs analysis, the buyer will say, you know, you've got a perfect understanding of our needs. You've actually helped me understand what we really need. This has been such a great collaboration. Thank you so much. Wouldn't it be great to hear that from the next set of buyers we listen to?
Oh, very definitely.
So the average salespeople are usually halfway decent at listening. But the perfect listeners use 3 techniques. They, of course, totally focus 100% on the buyer's point of view by listening to the buyer without getting into talk about what they can do, although it's very tempting from all these neuroscience studies. 2nd, they will ask permission to take notes and take notes. And there are 8 reasons to take notes, 5 based on neuroscience, 6 reasons to ask permission, 4 of the 6 based on neuroscience. And when they think they've really understood what the customer wants, they'll use the 3rd technique, and that is summarize and feed it back to the customer as many times as it takes for the customer to say, yep, you got it. So average salespeople use the 1st technique, usually pretty well, listen to the customer. but the top salespeople use the second two. And we've trained with 2,100 companies over 20 years, and just average data from these companies, if you take salespeople that have been doing okay, but they haven't been asking permission to take notes, they haven't been summarizing and feeding it back until they get it right, and they start doing it, you'll see this 30% increase in sales just because of that one shortcut. So there's 15 of those shortcuts. That's one of them.
Dan, it's all yours.
Well, thank you, Don, for bringing this interesting gentleman to our show. Mr. Asher, I'm a registered investment advisor with 43 years of experience, and I worked on Wall Street in the big corporate offices for many years and before I went out on my own. And, John, I trained a lot of brokers all over the United States with various brokerage firms in my perception of the selling process. And I believe that asking questions that discovers information is incredibly valuable in a successful sales outcome. And what I used to say to people who are new salespeople, if you want to find out what it's like to ask questions and discover information and not impose your will on the customer, go watch videotape of Johnny Carson and Barbara Walters. Those two people were consummate question askers who came to the table with little or no agenda, and we know very little about them even today, because in their technique, it was more important to discover information about the customer than it was to tell the customer how good and great I am. So I totally subscribe to the idea of making sure that you ask questions that create discovery of the customer and then shut up and listen to the answer, because it may lead you to an important question which will eventually lead you to a sale. I'm amazed at the number of people that are reluctant to ask for the order in the sales business. Do you find that true?
I do. And just to follow up on your listening technique, you know, the latest neuroscience studies, Harvard, SoCal, et cetera, where they actually put these mini MRIs, so you can map how what's going on in the brain. We know now that almost all decisions are made by the emotional brain. And most of the listeners have heard, I'm sure, some version of this. We decide on emotion and we justify with logic. And what it basically means is, as a salesperson, you can have great stuff, great quality, reasonable prices, great follow-up service. But if a buyer's trying to decide between three companies and they all have that, which one do they choose? And, of course, the answer is the one they make the best emotional connection with. And we now know that there are six stimuli that will wake up the buyer's old brain, and one of them is called me focused. It goes right back to fight or flight. We're all worried about ourselves, concentrating on our own safety. And because of that, most buyers don't view salespeople as safe. And so if the salesperson can take advantage of that one of six stimuli to wake up the buyer's old brain and get the buyer to talk, now we're doing exactly what Johnny and Barbara do and what you suggest. So totally agree.
So you've been training people, I think you said, for 20, 25 years?
Correct.
How is the salesman of today different than the salesman of 20, 25 years ago, or woman?
Well, one significant difference is, say, 20, 25 years ago, the way to really figure out how to do sales training, how to do sales, was, you know, trial and error, input from experts, advice from your boss, trying things, seeing what works. So there was really an art to sales. But now we know. there's a big science part of sales too, based on these latest neuroscience studies. So the big difference now is the elite salespeople understand the six stimuli that will wake up the buyer's brain, and they understand the 20-plus heuristics or biases, tendencies, rules of thumb, shortcuts that our brain uses to make decisions. That's a huge difference now.
Do you is your book available on Audible format?
You know, it isn't yet. It's going to be published on mid-October. It's
okay.
Available, you know, reviews and that sort of thing are available on Amazon. You can, of course, pre-order it on Amazon.
Okay.
Good question about Audible. I don't know yet.
Well, you know, as an author myself, all of my major books have come out on audio because the data that I'm hearing is that, you know, we went from paper, then we went to Kindle, and there were some people who were reluctant to go to Kindle because they liked the feel of turning the pages. And then came audio, where you put a MP3 in a slot, and you turn on and you listen. The book is being read to you. And if the author or the reader, excuse me, has a good voice and can make it interesting, it's a great way to really embed a lot of information into one's brain while you are functionally doing something else. I travel a lot in car, and I listen to audiobook a lot because it helps me pass the time, it keeps me awake, and I'm learning something. So you might want to seriously consider about an audiobook. Are your techniques available to only to corporations, or can individual salespeople who are looking to improve their performance, can they get in on this?
Well, the book is really targeted at one category that Harvard uses, and that is businesses selling to other businesses selling to the government, or businesses selling to high net worth individuals like wealth advisors, that sort of thing. That's all kind of lumped in one category because the sales
mm-hmm.
cycle is pretty much the same for all three of those. It's not so much oriented for retail salespeople in Macy's or that sort of thing. So mainly business to business, business to government, business to high net worth individuals, which of course is a lot of salespeople, about 25 million.
Oh, we have to take a break.
Well, let's go do the break. I'll just finish the question after the break.
Before you hear this, or this, or even this, before you turn a key, step on the gas, and let it rip, before you get up and out and on the road, you have to be fueled by something. Make sure that something is Valero. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at ValeroCleanGas.com.
In New York this week, 500 managers and bankers from across the fintech world met to discuss the rising use of online financial resource companies. It was the latest of a number of such conclaves across the country. What does it mean for small business leaders? Speaker after speaker droned on about the funds available to grow their small businesses. Other panelists talked about the ease such companies are making the loan process. Finding the money to grow can be as short as an hour. Some speakers said the average was 3 days versus going to a more traditional banking resource, which could take up to 3 months. But as one speaker pointed out, small businesses can suffer in one way from the fintech revolution. The personal banking touch that puts the small business leader in physical proximity to the banker, that personal touch that can come in handy should growth plans not work out exactly as expected, is not there. There is an old saying, when you owe enough to the bank, you own the bank. Most banks won't let that happen, but having a personal relationship can ease some issues. Fintech bankers are about doing everything over the internet. For those times when the small business succeeds, this works great. But what happens if they don't? It's harder without that personal touch. We're here with John Asher, whose new book is called Close Deals Faster. By golly, we all want that. The 15 shortcuts of the Asher sales method. And Dan, you had a question?
I do. John, we're talking to the network owner who broadcasts this show. And we're suggesting to him that he considered the possibility of expanding a sales force, specifically to sell time to guests who have been on some of his programs. I don't know that he runs 24/7, but he runs a good bit of the day. And so we're talking about a radio network. Hiring a person to sell time to individuals who may or may not have been on the network but might benefit from being on the network. So that's kind of a real specific challenge, or is it no different than anything else, John?
I don't think it's a lot different. And if you're going to hire that person, if you go to our website, we have about 150 public one-day sales training classes all around North America where people are just, any salesperson can go and get the benefit of the Close Deals Faster, 10 Skills, 15 Shortcuts.
And that's a one-day seminar?
It's a one-day seminar. One coming up in D.C. tomorrow. It's $695 a seat, and it includes a sales aptitude assessment, which gives the participant where their strengths and weaknesses are from an aptitude standpoint.
Uh-huh.
And about an hour discussion on how do you stretch your personality when you need to for better results.
Yeah. So this is an all-day event?
All-day event.
And you have them all over the country?
All over the country. Typically once a quarter in the major cities.
Okay. All right.
Can I jump in here and ask him, John, a question?
Sure.
Sure.
One of the most interesting experiences I had in the publishing area was I hired, I was given a very difficult assignment of taking an information product and trying to figure out how to sell it into businesses. I won't mention the company or the product. And I made a then radical decision of hiring four newly divorced women to be the sales force. And within a year and a half, they were the number one sales unit in the entire company. And actually, I got all kinds of kudos for it, but all I did was hire them and just point the way. And I learned from that high motivation is a key to success. What do you say to that, John?
When you watch the elite salespeople, there are five things operating together in the perfect storm for sales. One is product knowledge. And that is when people have a lot of product knowledge, it gives them power, it gives them confidence. And many buyers now, and since the world's going so technical, would much rather deal with what's called an SME, subject matter expert, sometimes called a sales engineer, with deep technical knowledge, rather than a salesperson with shallow technical knowledge who they know is just trying to sell them something. So the first of five factors for success is having great product knowledge. Second is having a natural talent for sales. And one of the nine basic traits is called intensity, drive, goal orientation, fire in the belly, whatever you want to call it. And, of course, for salespeople to be successful, they got to have that natural desire to make sales. The third is selling skills, like the perfect listening that I chatted about before. The fourth is motivation. And the fifth is sales and marketing processes that the company has to support the sales force. So the two aspects of motivation are, the first is the fire in the belly, part of our natural personality. And the second is, what's our current motivation based on what's going on in life? And as you said, you hired four recently divorced women. It doesn't matter whether they were women or men, actually. If you're recently divorced, you need more money, right? You don't have as much money as you had when you were married. So that current circumstance in your life can drive you to work harder and longer and make more sales.
Well, can I go a little further on that? You said earlier in this conversation that we now believe it's how did you put it? Emotion makes the sale, and then you use logic to justify it. But you mentioned all the four other things that you should have. And what as I heard you, I was thinking back, and these women really got to know the product, really got to know how to sell it. But is there a feeling that women can do the certain types of selling better than men?
Well, there's all kinds of politically incorrect facts. I'll give you just a couple. Example, because of the way our brains are wired, women can naturally read body language and men don't. So men have to learn how to read body language. And that's particularly useful in closing, because knowing when the buyer's ready to be closed, ready to make the sale, is a combination of the dialogue, the conversation, and the body language. And the body language is the true signals. So women have a natural advantage in closing. Another aspect of it is women actually take business more serious than men. So men will typically use sports analogies all throughout business and kid each other and use humor and that sort of thing. Whereas most women, you can't just stereotype everybody, but most women are much more serious about business. And so humor doesn't go over quite as well with women in business. So there's a number of differences. I just got to say another difference between men and women is it can be industry specific. Some women naturally fit into some areas like financial, HR, than men, and men naturally fit into some industries like heavy industrial products than women, or you know, selling to a shipyard or a submarine or that sort of thing. So it's not like men or women can't sell into those other areas, but they just naturally gravitate towards certain areas.
Yeah, very true. Well, we have about 5 minutes left. What are two or three things you'd like to tell our audience about your book and about selling that you think are key and that they should know?
Well, there's a couple things. One is of the first 8 skills to get a new customer, the weakest for all salespeople is closing, knowing how to close the deal. And there are 6 closing principles, all have neuroscience behind them. There's data behind them for the big sales institutes. And there's also statistics on what happens if you don't use the 6 closing principles, you know, which if you mess up some, what happens. And so very, very few salespeople in my experience, having trained 80,000 of them over years, very few understand all 6 closing principles, the neuroscience behind them, the data behind them, and what happens if you screw them up. So the second, the second weakest skill is listening that we talked about before, being the perfect listener. Then if you look at some of these shortcuts, the 15 shortcuts, 2 of them we just talked about, understanding the 6 ways to close a deal, 6 principles, number 2 being the perfect listener. LinkedIn is an interesting shortcut. LinkedIn, if you have the sales navigator level, in other words, the premium level, and you're a power user on LinkedIn, LinkedIn provides 4 of the 15 shortcuts. So my advice would be, if you're in sales and you don't have the premium level on LinkedIn, sales navigator level, and you're not a power user, it's time to get there, because LinkedIn is a 724/365 networking event with 190 million people. If your competitors are in there and you're not, it's not good. So just a couple of other tidbits.
Dan, you get to ask the last question.
If a young man or woman is just coming out of college, would you advise them to go out and try it on their own or find the money to go to your seminar?
Well, what I would advise, first of all, people who want to go into sales is use one of these aptitude assessments that have big data behind them to see how much talent you've got for sales. If you have a lot of natural talent for sales, yay, go into sales. But if you don't have much, it's time to think about a different career, because of those five factors I mentioned: product knowledge, aptitude, selling skills, motivation, and process. Aptitude, based on a meta-analysis of many HR Institute studies, accounts for 50% of results. So if you're hiring salespeople, for example, and they don't have the aptitude for sales, we really have one arm tied behind our back.
Where can a recent college graduate find a test like that?
Right on our website.
Google. Right on your website. Is there a charge?
Right on our website. Yes.
Is there a charge?
And it's called the APQ, Advanced Personality Questionnaire, has about 1,000 studies behind it to make sure that it's predictive of job success.
No,
I say if you take it, it'll show you your natural talent for customer service rep, CEO, outside sales, inside sales manager, etc.
Okay. We've been speaking with John Asher, who has a fascinating book that I believe is coming out, you said, in September, and it's called Close Deals Faster, 15 Shortcuts of the Asher Sales Method. John, thank you so much for being with us today, and I'm going to look forward
great
to the book.
Great to be with you. Great to be with you guys. Thank you.
We're definitely going to have a link to his website on our website tonight. I think he did an extraordinary job. Don't you think so, Dan?
Yes.
I found it fascinating. Well, Dan, we now get what everybody enjoys. We're going to hear one of your tips of the day.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your small business tip of the day. Are you protecting yourself against lazy lawsuits? You may be asking, what is a lazy lawsuit? This is a lawsuit because you have not been paying attention to the details. It used to be that you could do business on a handshake, but unfortunately, not anymore. Handshakes don't have any details, so both parties have to remember the same things for the handshake to work. The problem enters in when memories fail, and it turns into he said and she said. Here is the Recalculating Small Business tip of the day. Work with the client in developing a contract. That way your customer will be putting in writing what he expects you to do and when the job is to be completed. You will know what and when is expected of you. It may take a little extra time, but it will save you both time and money. I'm Dan Perkins from Recalculating.biz with your small business tip of the day.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit costs. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
At Valero, we believe life gets lived between every fill-up. So whether you go down the road on two wheels or four, whether your Wednesday night is spent racing to the grocery store or down a track, and whether you're dropping off the mail, the pizza, the kids, or all of the above, we're here to make sure you're never running on empty. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at ValeroCleanGas.com.
Well, Dan, what do you think about today's guests?
I think it's terrific. We'd like you to tell your entrepreneur friends about Recalculating for Small Business on AMFM247.com. And by the way, if you missed a part of the show today, you can go to our website, recalculating.biz, and listen to past shows. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll be talking to you again next week. I'm Dan Perkins.
And I'm Don Mazzella, and this is Recalculating Radio.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's episode was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, to contact us, to listen to past shows, and see special offers. Until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success. Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful.